And on the line, we have Janashtim. Thomas Ng and Janashtim are synonymous and born out of Thomas' passion to give hope to the people that the corporate world has left behind. His vision was to leverage technology and the internet to connect marginalized communities to the global economy. Today, Janashtim operates 100% remotely, providing online learning and support services globally. About 60% of its staff are people with diverse disabilities, 25% are refugees, and another 10% are LGBTQ and seniors across more than 10 countries. In 2004, Thomas left behind his corporate lifestyle after 25 years' service to build Janashtim, which is now a world-acclaimed entity, recognized as best of the world among B Corps for 4 consecutive years. Besides Janashtim, Thomas also serves in leadership positions in YPO and the ASEAN Responsible and Inclusive Business Alliance. He's also one of the founding global advisors for the Knowledge Pledge. Thomas, let's move to you and hear a little bit more about Janashtim. So please just tell us a little bit more about this project and the impact that you're creating.
Okay, so if I could start with perhaps why did I get into this in the first place? I retired from my corporate life fairly early. I had 25 years in corporate life and the last 15 years as an expat in Asia. My last job was as the country manager and president for a big multinational in the Philippines. And when I retired, I was invited to join the board of trustees for a computer school for the blind. And when I figured out and saw how blind people can very efficiently use the computer, access the internet and do stuff, I thought, good, they should be employed. But apparently, after training 500 blind people to use a computer, hardly any one of them was working. So I tried to introduce them to companies and tried to promote them to be workers. There's a lot of excitement, but then in the end, nothing much happens because after 2.5 years, I couldn't achieve any result. So I decided that I believed that this could work. So I decided that we would start a business and start hiring initially the blind. And that was how Janashtim was started. And we thought, what was the thing that we could do, you know? Because one of the biggest problems for disabled people is that they cannot commute to work. And in Manila especially, you know, even normal people take 2 hours to commute very often to work each way. So that's why we started this whole idea about remote work, working from home. And we've been doing this for more than 12 years. And so all the services we provide are provided digitally. So in a sense, you know, with COVID-19, we have been preparing for it for more than 10 years. So we are 100% remote work company. We have people across 6 continents and we're delivering everything digitally. So that's been a very satisfying outcome in a sense. I mean, still feel sorry for a lot of people who suffer from COVID-19, but we have actually thrived. And I also like to add that the people who work for us initially are all the disabled, and many of them are very severely disabled. We have about 3 or 4 of our employees who can't use anything below their neck, so they're using the voice to activate the computers. And we have many of them who actually work in from the bed. They can't even sit up. And we have also the mentally impaired, the autistic people who work for us, and they are particularly good at compliance jobs. And we have a lady who actually is not only paralyzed from the neck down, but she can't breathe on her own. So she has to be on a ventilator 24/7. So up till 2018, we had about 70 employees, of which 90% were people with disabilities. In 2018, we started to hire refugees. These are Middle Eastern refugees who are stuck in Indonesia. So today, we have about 120 employees on our payroll across the world. About 60% are people with disabilities, 20% are refugees. Another 10% are either seniors, LGBTQ, HIV infected, or women from oppressed environments. So we hire women who can work from places like Afghanistan and Pakistan, where it's not so easy for them to join the workforce. Thank you.
Thomas, that's an extraordinary effort there. So winning the APSIPA award highlights all of your dedication, hard work, and skills to innovate. So I'm keen to hear a little bit about your observations then of the social innovation movement in your respective countries and further afield, and where you see key opportunities and next steps. So Thomas, we might start with you. You're based in Singapore. What are your observations of the movement?
Okay, so in Singapore, I've been involved in a number of these movements. So, I mean, AREBA, the ASEAN Responsible and Inclusive Business Alliance, one of them. The other one is, I'm actually representative also of the B Corp movement in Southeast Asia. So we are also pushing the B Corp agenda.
Yeah.
And thirdly, my company has also been given the task by RAISE Singapore. So RAISE Singapore, R-A-I-S-E, is the Social Enterprise Authority of Singapore. It's part of the Singapore government. They are the ones who accredit social enterprise in Singapore. So we actually got the job, they outsourced to us, to actually be the ones to review applications. So we've been checking applicants to be social enterprise. And from the statistics which I have, from a British Council report, there are about 20,000 social enterprises in Singapore, which I suppose are self-proclaimed. And only about 400 are actually registered with RAISE. So it's not so easy. So from the many companies which we have rejected, I think that the great thing is there are a lot of passionate people who want to do something, but many of them get a bit lost. They don't have they can't build a financial model, a business plan. And many of them are doing things very scattered, and many of them are doing the same things. So I think there is, number one, there's a huge opportunity to kind of try to put them together, to have a kind of a social enterprise exchange where you can actually meet each other and combine your efforts and hopefully have a more robust proposal. And secondly, the thing is that a lot of these people are young, are passionate, but they have no business, they don't have enough business acumen. So I think a mentorship program would be something which would be very, very helpful. I'm pretty sure there are many retired executives who would be more than happy to spend time to mentor these social enterprises. I don't see that really happening on any scale, and I think there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, some great insights there, Thomas. And thanks for sharing the work that you're doing with RAISE as well. I'm very familiar with their work and know that they've been involved in previous years with the Social Enterprise World Forum. So it's great to have that body there in Singapore, which is helping to promote the movement more broadly as well. So Thomas, let's hear some advice that you have considering your experience in setting up your enterprise. What would you give?
Tom, I'm so glad that you actually asked the question with what other business people can do, because whilst I think it's, of course, great that we have social innovators and social entrepreneurs start up businesses with a strong purpose, like what Lance and Julie have alluded to. I think that you can get a lot more acceleration and bigger results, impact from existing businesses who then choose to align the way they do business with ESG principles. And to do this, there are today very useful tools and easy tools which you can use. And they are actually, the ones I'm going to suggest are actually free. One is the SDG Action Manager, which was launched by Global Compact, United Nations Global Compact. And that tool was actually provided by B-Lab. B-Lab is the non-profit organization behind B Corp certification. And that is quite simple to use. You can choose to only do a number of SDGs. You don't have to do all of them. If you want to get a bit more serious, then you can then, and with the SDG Action Manager, you can actually transition into the B Impact Assessment. B Impact Assessment is a more in-depth assessment which goes into your business and gives you an assessment. And eventually, if you reach a certain score, you can actually go for B Corp certification. But the important thing, the more important thing, I believe, is that when you do these assessments, you get a bit of a benchmark of where you stand, whether it's with the BIA or with each SDG. And it also shows you what are the other things you can do to improve. So it provides a roadmap for you to progressively align your businesses over time. And I believe that if all businesses were to do this and think along this way, there will be a much bigger impact that will, you know, come to society at a much shorter time. Thank you.
Yeah, great insights there, Thomas. Thanks for sharing that. Thomas, let's talk about your books or resources or other recommendations to our listeners.
Okay, so thanks, Tom. This is an easy one. There is a book that was published in September last year, called Better Business by a professor, Chris Marquis. Chris started his life as the vice president of JP Morgan Chase, and then he went on to lecture at Harvard University for 10 years. And even lectured at the Kennedy School. And in recent years, he has been with Cornell University as the head of Global Sustainable Enterprises. And Chris has a wealth of knowledge. He's traveled the world extensively. He's a frequent visitor. He was a frequent visitor to Asia, spent some time lecturing in the top universities in China as well. And I believe Chris actually speaks better Mandarin than I do. So his book is Better Business by Chris Marquis. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Thomas. Sounds like a great resource there.